I'm Hallie Bateman, writer, illustrator, and cartoonist.
I'm Nadine Kenny Johnstone, award-winning author, writing coach, and podcast host.
I'm Molly Weisenberg. I'm a memoirist, personal essayist, podcast host, and I teach writing.
We are leading a retreat together in Spain, October 26th through November 2nd. It is called Tiny True Stories and Sketches, a micro-memoir retreat.
That's right. So anything that a person writes starts with a small moment. You have to notice the small moment, decide to put it in writing, and then actually do it. And we'll give you a number of different approaches to make the kinds of short pieces of writing that add up to big feeling.
Not only are you going to be learning so much about writing from Nadine and Molly, but you're going to be working on words and images with me. And every participant is going to come away from the trip with a beautiful illustrated travelogue.
Come join us. It'll change your life.
See you there.
Come to Spain.
This is Heart of the Story, and I'm Nadine Kenny Johnstone. I'm an author and a holistic writing coach who talks with today's top women writers about how to navigate life when things don't go according to plan. These impactful conversations and personal reflections invite you to be seen, feel supported, and ultimately fall back in love with yourself. So let's go together to that honest, powerful place. The heart of the story. Hi, friends. Today we're doing something really special on the show that I rarely ever do. I am chatting with two people today, two people I greatly admire, best-selling authors Molly Weisenberg and Hallie Bateman. The three of us are getting together to lead a magical retreat in Spain at the end of October. It's called Tiny True Stories and Sketches, a Micro Memoir Retreat. My goodness, are we excited about this? We have been chatting so much behind the scenes to put together something that we hope will be truly magical for the retreat participants. So we have been talking at length, putting together exercises and activities and an itinerary that will inspire and lead to some really, we hope, life-changing moments for both your personal life and your artistic life. And I just thought, what if you could tap into some of the chats that we had? Like, what if we could just press record while the three of us are chatting so you could get a real sense of how giddy we are when we talk about prioritizing creativity. It is something we are so deeply passionate about. And once you get us started, we just can't stop talking about it. And so that's what we did. We came on the mic for one of our chats and we talked about cultivating a sustainable creative practice. Moments in our life where we felt really blocked or we even hated what we were working on and what we did about it. Times when resistance was a really big obstacle in our work. Experiences where retreats were life-changing for us, either as leaders or participants. And some really surprising things that have happened to us when we have experimented with things we don't normally do. So it was really interesting to have this chat because all three of us have faced resistance, and yet it has led to some really pivotal shifts in our creative lives. So for example, as you'll hear us talk about, Hallie used to resist retreats. And then Molly resisted journaling. And I was a fiction writer before I became a memoirist and essayist. And it wasn't until I had a huge shift as a result of a retreat that I attended that I made the switch from fiction to nonfiction. If you are someone who is facing a block creatively, emotionally, personally, and you're looking for some inspiration around maybe opening up yourself to something new, this conversation is for you. Because we were so giddy, we jumped right in. We didn't mess around with any setup or anything like that. We just started chatting and we were off to the races and it was so fun. So for context, the very first voice you're going to hear is that of the great author and illustrator, Halle Bateman.
I'm truly having many epiphanies from this retreat happening, and even just us talking about it has opened my eyes to some things.
Yeah.
I loved in school when there's the pages that have lines on the bottom, but the top half is left for drawings because it's assumed that words and images are foundational to learning, to our understanding of reality. I'm sitting with my kids every night. I just got this new book for them that's like the big book of words, and you're going through and it's a drawing of an elephant, and it's like we give names to things and we and they see it all together, and it's building this reality in their mind that is like so cool to see that. And thinking about our retreat and being someone who's starting to look back and be like, why do I write with images? I'm like, I think that this is how we learn reality. This is how our brains like start comprehend life. And then eventually it kind of gets petered out. And even as someone who like is a cartoonist and still works with words and images, like I think there's still like a part of me that can look down on them and underestimate them as being like really important, like writing and thinking tools. And like that kind of blew my mind of being like, it's so crazy that we stop using the half pages and that we stop.
Yeah.
It starts to just be word, 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 word. And like,
yeah.
What if we didn't stop? And for our retreat or just thinking about like what we're talking about, like, can we pull some of that accessibility back in of like, and what if you drew too, like alongside? And I don't know.
I love the way that you're connecting that, because it's not only drawings, but as you were saying, like it's about how we process the world. And as kids, or for kids, we really prioritize the visual side of things, right? Especially pre-literacy. But then when we come into literacy, we like toss all that other stuff out the window.
It's kid stuff.
But it's a huge part of everything.
Yeah. My son is 12, Gio. He has to read a handful of deep books this year. And there's a whole list of the deep books that they can choose from. One of them is The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield. And it talks all about resistance, like how we face resistance anytime we want to create something. And I realized that I read the book maybe 3 years ago and I'm like, wow, this is blowing my mind. I know exactly like what he's talking about. And I show it to Gio, and on the back, it was like, have you ever like sat down to create something and you just didn't? Or have you ever wanted to do blah, 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 and something got in your way? And in my mind, I was like, yes, yes, yes. And Gio goes, no, no, no. And I was like, oh, he hasn't met resistance yet. And that's because he's still in this
drawing,
sketching, creating land. He doesn't yet know about word supremacy. He doesn't yet know about all the perfectionist things that just stop us, you know? So,
yeah.
It's amazing. Okay. I love that we're having this conversation, because I was just the other day, I was out taking a walk listening to the book Brainstorm by Dan Siegel. So he's a, I think he's a psychiatrist, but he's written a whole lot about like the adolescent brain.
Yeah.
And the school that Silas, my older kid, goes to has asked like all the families to read this book, Brainstorm, which is, I think the subtitle is something like The Power and Potential of the Adolescent Brain.
Ooh.
It is all evidence based and like based in science, but very much about why teenagers do and are what they are. It's meant to be read both by adults and by teenagers. But there was this whole piece of it in what I was listening to the other day about how these moments of adulthood when we feel really stuck, mm-hmm. like when every day feels the same, or we wake up and we go to the job and we come home and everything feels just sort of flat. Mm-hmm. He was specifically talking about how certain aspects of the teenage brain, like if we can re-bolster those things that we mm-hmm. once had, like this neural wiring to seek novelty, to just all kinds of things, that they would be antidotes to depression, to loneliness, all kinds of things. But we get these sort of pummeled out of us.
Yeah.
As we move from adolescence into adulthood. And anyway, so what we're talking about is all of that, mm-hmm. like keeping that like plasticity of the young brain into adulthood, or maybe feeding it and re-strengthening it in adulthood.
Yeah. And that's what we're hoping to do on this retreat that we're leading together.
Woohoo! As you're talking about that, I'm thinking about the kind of mission that we've kind of landed on for our retreat is like trying to give people access to skills and little like access points and like a foundation for like a creative practice. So it's like, if you want to like talk about doing this for a job or talk about technical stuff, like, yes, we're totally down for that. But the idea is that like this can be something that becomes a creative practice that can sustain your, at least I think of it as like kind of sanity, like through your life. And that like the value of art is so many things. But when we pivot from the beautiful geo standpoint of like, I've never met resistance. That sounds really tough, to being like, I can't draw. I can't write. I am bad at these things. I think that people can hear themselves say that enough times that they believe that they're at an irretrievable place and that it's a fact and that they like truly believe it, that if they touch the pen to paper, they're going to like die from what they see. Mm-hmm. As I was like making daily journal comics throughout the month of January, at one point I like wrote about it. I was like, I truly think if you're someone who has no creative practice, if you're starting from absolute scratch, if you think you can't draw, whatever, I think if you did a daily journal comic for 30 days, you would come out of it with the skills to have a sustainable creative practice, because you're introspecting every day, pen to paper every day, you're observing the world, you're paying attention, you're developing an eye for story. And I think that this adult mindset where it's not even our fault, you get winnowed down by capitalism, like however, like these forces, but like this is like very doable and like can be taught, and like this like delicacy that adults can have about like, oh, I'm not an artist, like I know such creative people who still feel that way. Like I just want to like bring the folks who join us in Spain, I just want to try to impart as much of these kind of like long-term skills as possible. And like I would love to kind of hear from each of you what your version of that would be. If I'm like, ooh, I think you could do a daily comic every day, like this would be the foundation, like what do each of you guys have something like that that you feel kind of zealous about?
Molly, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, so I'm somebody who was really resistant to journaling until a few years ago. And I think it's something that, well, I love to talk, especially in week-long workshops, I love to talk about why writing feels hard when you care about it, because you have standards and it matters to you. And the more that you read, the more you consume within this field that you care about, the more your standards go up, and it just becomes harder. And you can either choose to think that that is a reason to not do it, or you can choose to say, well, of course it's hard. I care about it, and I'm going to do it anyway. And so for me, that was kind of my experience of journaling. I think that, gosh, for the first, am I in my fifth decade of living if I'm 47? Am I figuring this out? Yeah.
Yes.
Right?
Whoa, guys. That makes me feel things.
Three writers had to kind of go, oh, yeah.
Anyway, but so it took me till age 44 to really start journaling. And I think that some of it was this feeling of having my own sort of internal editor be too good at her job. Mm-hmm. But I think that some of it too was being unable to believe that the minutia of my own mind was worth spending time with. Mm. And it's amazing for me to say that now because it's a huge part of my life now. Mm. I love spending time inside my own mind. I mean, where else would I write from? Mm. But all this to say, I think that something that has been really, really helpful to me and maybe is akin to your daily autobiographical comics has been just learning to develop a journaling practice that works for me and not in any format that any number of formats that I might have tried. You know, Julia Cameron's Morning Pages, I like it sometimes. Mm. Linda Barry, the like four panel thing she does, that's like,
that's my girl.
Yes. Mm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I was just pulling one up that I did while on a retreat I was teaching in Italy last fall. This little thing at the bottom, this was a dog's tombstone with reeds hanging from it. At this beautiful place where we were teaching, there was a little grave marker for a dog who had died.
Fifi.
Anyway, but the way that Linda Barry's four-panel sort of journaling concept works is you make a rectangle on a piece of paper, you divide it into four quadrants. One is what you did. One is maybe what you saw or noticed. Another could be what you heard. And then you make a drawing in the fourth one. This is me very loosely paraphrasing. Yeah. But what it did was it got me into sort of my sensory mind, my mind that can picture things, can remember what smell like, can remember things I heard. And all of that is essential and has been essential to my writing for two decades. But I wasn't tending to it on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And so learning to just not just pay attention to, but also record and take seriously in a playful format my own mind. Mm. That's been huge for me. And it's something I also really love to talk about when I'm teaching. Because I think that, especially for people who are socialized female, we are often taught to not pay attention to our own minds, mm-hmm. To even distrust our own minds. Yeah. And everything that the three of us do creatively in life requires you to pay attention to your own mind and your own life.
But sometimes you're doing it despite yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did you start journaling if you weren't into it? Why did you start that?
So I have a friend, my friend Ben. He lives in Memphis. I live in Seattle. And Ben, he is a guy who's also in his fifth decade of living. Mm-hmm. And Ben is this married straight guy who's an opera director. And he's I hope he'll forgive me for saying this, but very self-helpy. Like Ben is always sort of seeking, which is something I also love about him. Anyway, but he had started doing this journaling practice a couple years earlier. And he really had started to notice that there was like a tipping point at which it began to really change his day-to-day life. Mm. And he challenged me, gosh, Hallie, we're coming back around to your month-long thing here. He challenged me to journal the way that he was journaling for a month. And we went so far as to every day we would send photographs of our journals to each other. Mm. And it was also really lovely, like as long distance friends. I mean, and we've been friends for almost two decades, but as long distance friends to each like send a photograph of our journal. Mm. And sometimes I would read his, sometimes he would read mine. Sometimes it was just for the accountability. But at the end of the month, I was like, oh, not only did I just do a lot of writing that I wouldn't have done otherwise, but wow, just this daily practice was like tuning up my writer self a little bit every mm-hmm. day. And so that when I would sit down to write something, and here I'm like air quotes, when I would sit down to write something real, mm-hmm. like an essay that I knew I would want to publish, it felt somehow like there was so much less resistance between me and the words.
Mm. God, I love that.
I mean, this is the whole thing about practice, though, right? Yeah. But it's true whether we're drawing or whether we're writing fiction or whether we're writing out of our own lives. I don't know. For me, acknowledging that resistance is a natural state, at least for adults.
Yeah.
and that we that it doesn't mean anything. Yeah. That it's just something we have to find our way around and through. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it sounds to me like we all are kind of offering various different approaches to that.
Yeah, yeah. Susan Piver was on this show and she...
Nadine, I'm really sorry, but my friend Ben uh-huh. recommended Susan Piver's book to me, the one about like questions you're supposed to ask a potential partner or something.
Before you get married, yeah.
Yes, classic Ben. Oh my yes. God, okay, I'm sorry, yes, you can yes. go back.
But she is a studier of Buddhism and a meditation teacher as well. And she took a retreat with Natalie Goldberg, whom I love. And Natalie Goldberg says, magic needs containment. And I fully believe this because I am someone who can be so creative so long as I have a structure. If the world is my oyster, I am paralyzed. Mm-hmm. I need some parameters and limitations so that I can access, we're talking about access points, so that I can access material. And so years ago, I took a class with Pam Houston, the great writer, and she calls these little moments that we might capture glimmers. And so my practice is all about gathering glimmers every day. I'm just on the hunt for them. I'm like, where is a glimmer? A glimmer is a moment that just gives you pause. You're like, something's here. This moved me in some way. This made me notice in some way. There's something here and I'm going to capture it. And I don't know what this will become. It might not become anything. I don't know the full story around this, but this is something. And even for example, the other day, my glimmer that I gathered was that we are prepping to move to a house. We've been renting in Florida for 4 years now, and we're about to buy a home. And our son is 12 going on 13. And we're sitting in his bedroom. I'm sitting with him, and he has two gigantic bins of stuffed animals. And here he is, now 5'3", like this giraffe of a boy man, growing by the day. His voice is deepening, and he's sitting in front of these piles of stuffed animals, and he's deciding what to keep and what to throw away, what to give away. And it's like, it is such a pivotal moment of him transitioning into teenhood. And he's sitting there going, I really loved you, but I don't need you anymore. And you're going to find a better home. And then he picks up the purple dog and he starts getting teary-eyed. And I'm just watching as he's like both maturing into teenage land and just reminiscing over his childhood. And I'm watching it play out in real time. And I'm like, I don't know what this is, but it's a glimmer and I'm going to capture it because I know it's going to become a story. So I think we're all talking about wow. how do we capture moments through writing, through sketching, through journaling, whatever it might be, right?
Mm-hmm. And trusting that it stood out to you and not beating it to death the moment it appears because you're afraid or you don't trust that what's interesting to you is interesting to someone else.
Yeah.
Trusting that and giving it space to just exist. Because also, I think what we're talking about in the retreat is like all of these little things, the collections of glimmers, the comics, the journaling, it is art in itself. And then it also is ingredients for your future self to look back on when you're wondering, wow, what was I going through at that time? Or what was my son turning into a teenager like? And then having that record is invaluable to have that to turn back to, right?
Well,
yeah, Molly.
I was going to add too that, of course, this retreat is shaped around the idea of tiny true stories and sketches. And to go back to this idea that you had, Nadine, about containment, right? Or the importance of limits. Mm-hmm. I mean, even, you know, Hallie, when you're a single panel comic or even just a single page with four panels or whatever, each of these things presents a set of constraints, right? And yeah. It is so helpful for us as writers because it's like it gives us a mold to pour our thoughts into or to pour our material into. And so I love that what we are talking about here, even though you could use it to write an entire book, to make a life's work, that what we're talking about and what we're going to be really focusing on in our workshops at the retreat is these sort of ways of giving yourself useful constraints that can allow you to just make your work. And that work, even in tiny bite-sized pieces, adds up.
Yeah.
And is completely, let's say it never sees the light of day. Okay. Mm-hmm. I have 11 sketchbooks that trace my pregnancy through current day. I said, this is where I am writing about becoming a parent. Mm-hmm. There's a few things that maybe I've shared. Most of it haven't. Maybe I'll make a book out of it. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say, for the sake of our listeners, that's just a 3-year period, right?
Yeah. Two. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, no, no. Well, three
years, including your pregnancy, right? Yeah, so yeah. 3 years, yeah. 11 sketchbooks. Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
So I'm like, oh, maybe I'll make a memoir out of that. I don't really know. But what is true is that this was a really tumultuous, beautiful, crazy period of my life. And I cannot tell you what a relief it has been to, at the end of a day, sit down and go, okay, what happened? What's going on with Max and Nora? Or illustrating my birth story and having a place. I bought like a specific color. My sketchbooks for these are like a different color, a different shape. I just kind of created this thing of like, this is what this is. And giving myself the gift of this constraint, giving myself a destination for all of the thoughts that are around this stuff, around becoming a parent. Like, I don't know how I would be okay if I didn't have a place to put that. For my mental health, for my creative life, like, it's all so interwoven. But, like, I just, like, can't speak highly enough of having something like that where it does something for me emotionally, honestly, on like a physical level that no therapist, no pharmacist, no husband, no friend, no parent could do for me that I give myself. And I totally still come up against the resistance that we all talk about. That is inevitable. But God, is it nice to be able to put your stuff somewhere. And like, I don't know how I would have gotten through this, you know, pregnancy and postpartum period without having this little receptacle. Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I love the idea of a receptacle. Yeah. I had a dear friend recently go through IVF and then a really horrific birth experience. And I myself have had both of those experiences as well. And an IVF procedure that I went through ended up sadly leading to major hemorrhaging and ended up with me in life-saving surgery. And so she was talking to me and she said, you know, like, God, you went through a lot of stuff. And I kind of turned and I was like, oh, I did. And she was like, you seem okay though. And I was like, oh, well, that's because I journaled about almost every single moment. And then I drafted an entire book about it, revised the entire book about it, put that book out into the world. And so, again, even if it never got published, the mere processing of that on the page, those moments over and over and over again, have led me to a very different place with those experiences than some other traumatic things that I haven't chronicled nearly as much about. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, we've made quite a case for why it's important to get some things on the page. Now, to just fill people in who might be like, I'm really interested in what you all might be doing in Spain, maybe we can talk about just what it'll actually be like. And also, like, it's going to be fun too. guys. Like, it's going to be really fun. So Molly, can you maybe take us through, like, what can people even expect if they join us in Spain for a week?
Well, there will be three of us and up to 18 participants. The days, they won't start too early, right? I think breakfast, oh gosh, maybe we should pull up the schedule. Jeez. Here we go. I'm not going to go minute by minute, but everyone get ready. You're going to wake up. You're going to be in this amazing villa in southern Spain with these panoramic views, native plants, and your new best friends, including us. And anyway, we're going to go to breakfast. We'll have a delicious breakfast, and then we will head into our first class of the day. So you'll have two and a half hour classes most days, especially at the beginning of the week. The retreat will start with a workshop led by all three of us, sort of laying the groundwork for what we hope to do, what we hope to share with you in terms of writing and sketching, and sort of creating a shared vocabulary for the week so that we all are familiar with the same foundational concepts. We'll have lunch together each day. Then you'll have a little break after lunch and then another workshop, especially in the first couple days. It will feel like a lot of learning. It's going to be fantastic. You will do some writing and some discussing in each workshop. So you'll get some writing done, you know, while you're with us in class time. But then at the end of each afternoon, you will have some downtime to use as you would like it, to lie by the pool or take a walk or take a nap. I'm a big fan of naps, to read, to write, to just be a person in Spain. And we'll have a delicious dinner together every evening. As the week goes on, there will be more open time for us to write and sketch together, but not within like a class setting, more like keeping each other company as we do our work. Anybody else want to talk about the two half-day excursions we'll do?
Yeah. So we are going to Almería, the historic town in the area. And so not only do we get historic city vibes and we get to talk and write and sketch while we're there, but we also get to hang out at a little cafe. Since we'll be in this venue by ourselves, this private venue, this will be an experience to like really mill about with all the people and be in the town. And then on one of the other days, we're going to the Cabo de Gata National Park and just think beauty. You know, you have the volcanic coastline, you have coves. We're only like a 30-minute drive from some of Spain's best beaches. And then you've got the plants, you've got the animals, all the things. So that'll be really great.
We all have sketchbooks. Yes.
We all have sketchbooks.
Yes. And then at night too, on the retreat for 3 nights, we're going to have a Q&A. So each night is a different one of us that will sit down and read a little bit of our work or share a bit of our work. And then we get to be in the hot seat and do a Q&A where anyone can ask us anything. And so I always love this part when I'm a participant, just kind of picking the brains of the instructors and really getting a feel of their creative process. And then, Helly, maybe you could talk about, you know, the backdrop to all of this is that they're going to be creating like this week-long travelogue kind of sketch diary as well. So especially for someone who might not consider themselves like a drawer or illustrator, maybe you can fill them in on the magic you're bringing to it.
Yeah. So I am, speaking of receptacles, I'm a big believer in a sketchbook, and especially on any kind of trip or this like out of the ordinary experience, I need to have a sketchbook with me as kind of like a way to like both record my experience there and allow myself to be fully present there. I don't know if this is just me, but I feel like I can be like a very like itchy person. And I think that that's so much of why I am drawn to drawing is like you're kind of forced to like sit still and like look at the building and like draw the building. Like so many of my memories from trips I've taken are from moments when, you know, maybe I'm really overwhelmed, everything's really new, and moments when I'm like, sit down, pick up the pen, draw what you see. Choose a subject, record what you see. I mean, I'm looking at a sketchbook right now that I'm trying to make a zine out of, but of this train trip I took with my dad. And I was flipping through it. I was like, there's so many things that remain still in my memory or that come right back to me because I like sat there and I recorded it and I like gave it this attention. And I think it's such a rich way to travel. And I think it deepens any experience of travel. And I mean, it deepens your everyday life, but I'm so excited to like sit down with everyone, be like, here's your brand new cute little sketchbook. And by the end of our time together, you are going to have a written and visual portal back to this space and a way to just have a place to put little notes, like food you eat, conversation you overheard, ideas you had. And then as part of my classes, we're going to be doing micro memoir comics. We're going to be doing daily journal comics. And, you know, for each day of our retreat, I want to have us do this exercise of a comic every day. We're going to like, it's going to be very fun. There's like a supplies list that I'm going to send with like the sketchbook and the pens and stuff that people have. But I think I'm also going to just bring like a big box of pens and be like, I'm really excited about that because I think that a pen can change your life. So the idea is that you wrap up this retreat with this sketchbook of your time and you can kind of see what that looks like and always have this access point back. You know, it's going to be a very jam-packed week. And I think it's going to be really helpful to have like visual notes. And I think there's going to be a fun interplay between the writing exercises that you guys are doing that delve into memory and delve into personal stories and things like that. And then mine is like, what did you see this morning? And what has stuck with you from very small containers of time? And I think that those things are like deeply interconnected.
Yeah, we're capturing the past and the present. We are learning how to write stories about both and really in these teeny tiny containers. So Molly, maybe you can share why we decided on like the small form for this. And what do you think is unique about it? Like what makes this sort of retreat a little different than others?
Well, so for me, something that I have found incredibly freeing in my writing life is that no matter what size your project is or your vision is, you know, whether you're like, I want to write a book or just I'm keeping a journal that is for me, you have to begin with small pieces. That's how anything gets built. And I think about this, especially when it comes to telling stories from our own lives, right? So, you know, life has actually very few big sweeping moments in it. I think this is why people get so excited about engagements and weddings and new babies. Like these are huge, like punctuation marks within what is otherwise a life full of very small things, and small things add up to big meaning. And so if you can learn how to notice small moments that make your life feel like your life, small moments that are emblematic of your choices, your preferences, your people, if you can learn to capture those, not only to notice them, but then to confidently put them into words or into sketches, you can make anything of any length from that.
Yeah.
So I'll be teaching an approach to writing from memory, to kind of rebuilding memories in a really sort of three-dimensional way within your own mind so that you can sit inside them and write from them. And we're talking here like small memories. I mean, we may start with something like a, you know, your childhood kitchen table. Mm-hmm. And we're just gonna rebuild it in our mind so we can sit there again and notice what happens. Mm-hmm. Because stuff always happens. So I'll be talking about that. I'll also be teaching about writing this way, capturing memories, writing from memories in the form of a list. We may use Joe Brainard's wonderful book, I Remember.
I love that book.
Isn't that incredible? Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's basically an entire book made out of sentences that begin with I remember. And it adds up the way that the lines of a poem add up to a big meaning and big effect. So we'll look at the way that repetition and list making can build a piece of writing. And we'll also explore how the letter form works. A letter is a small piece of writing that all of us know how to write. We all know how to write a letter. But you can make art from a letter. So we're going to look at that as a small form too.
Yeah. And I think between your prompts, Molly, and yours, Hallie, like, and then I'll be doing tiny true stories, like tiny love stories that are 100 words or less. We'll be doing hermit crab forms where we take existing forms and we turn them into really interesting little tidbits and stories. And we have all of these really interesting forms that we're going to use. The whole point is to do something that we normally don't allow ourselves to do on the daily, which is experiment and try and have fun. I think each of us has in common that what we're really hoping for is to return people back to themselves, help people remember their intuitive, creative excitement that maybe has gone really dormant, or the world has kind of scared the shit out of us. And it's like our creativity has just shrunken and shriveled and hardened. And at this retreat, my hope is that we help you remember that expansive, fun, experimental, creative side of you that's always there, but has just gotten maybe overshadowed.
Don't you think that we can forget that it's an option to like love our work? Yeah. Like, yeah. I was talking, so I read a friend's unpublished novel recently and it blew my mind.
Yeah.
And I talked to her about it and I got to be like, oh my God, I can't believe how you did this. And it was amazing. And like, my friend is like, she's so talented and like quite self-deprecating and stuff. And I was deeply moved that when I said that to her, she went, wow, you're making me fall in love with my book all over again. And her saying that, I was rocked to my core. I was like, all I've been doing is hating my book. Like, I'm working on a book and I've just been like hating it and just wishing it ill, like almost like,
yeah.
And her saying that deeply moved me and made me remember that is an option, and that is like actually my only option if I wish to finish this book, which I do anyway.
Well,
you guys both blew my mind just now with everything you said.
Yeah, Molly. Yeah.
Well, I want to add to that I'm lucky to get to lead retreats like this, like 2 or 3 times a year. I can't believe I get to say that. But
yeah,
something that I always notice, these groups of participants come in, they don't know each other. I mean, maybe we'll have 2 people who came together.
Right.
But otherwise, it's a group of strangers. And they come in because they all are sort of looking for something. Maybe they can't articulate it as clearly as Nadine, what you just said about sort of wanting to be returned to some version of themselves that they love.
Yeah.
But what happens is we all sort of just by doing our creative work together, first quietly and then kind of starting to talk with each other about it, and then sort of really getting to know each other through each other's work, all of a sudden we find that we've kind of all like midwifed each other into that state.
Yes.
And it always happens that way. It's so cool. It is just what happens when a group of people get together for such good human reasons, I think. Mm.
Well, what both of you are talking about is making me think of like, we all have these moments where we love our work and then we can forget that we love our work and we can become very disgruntled. Yeah. And no one is exempt from that feeling. And so the beauty of workshop and retreat is falling back in love. And I'd be curious, Hallie, you just shared a moment and I'm going to share a moment and I'll ask Molly to share a moment, but it felt like such a relief to hear you say out loud that, oh, I've kind of been like not in love with my book and I want to be back in love with it. Because several months ago, I was just feeling like, gosh, everything that I was writing about felt so hard and painful. And I was like, if someone read my work, they wouldn't know that I laugh a day in my freaking life. They wouldn't know that like on a daily basis, like my family banters back and forth all the time and sarcasm is our love language. And like they wouldn't have, a reader would not have a clue. And I was just like, rrr. And I was so like kind of like, oh, is all I'm ever going to write about like these dramatic moments. And then we had this experience as a family where over winter break, Gio and I accompanied my husband, Jamie, to his colonoscopy. So it's like, what did you do over your holiday break? Well, most families go visit grandma and grandpa or go to Disney, but Gio went to Borland and Groover Diagnostic Imaging for dad's colonoscopy. You know, it's like, and just the absurdity of the moment. Like there was so many funny things that happened, especially when Jamie came back and he was like, so hopped up on the amnesia drugs. And he was saying like the weirdest things that it was like such a wild experience. And I came back and I got to my computer and I was like typing, smiling to myself, laughing to myself. And I was like, oh yeah, this can be fun. This can be fun. I forgot. And we're going to be reminding people of that over the retreat. But maybe Molly, you could share a moment where you were like having a rough time with your work and what got you out.
Actually, wait, I'm going to ask Hallie to go next. Do you have one?
Yeah. I will say just as a cap to what I said about my friend saying she loved her book, like I truly turned back to my poor abused manuscript and it reminded me of just my relationship with myself where sometimes like the self-criticism can just really go rampant and you forget that you're like a tender little being. And I think that your work can be so assessed on quality and worthiness and that you're looking at this thing that is like, it's like a little baby. You know, I would never look at Max and Nora and be like, you better measure up, you little. And like to my little poor little, you know, toddler, my book is a toddler. I'm on the second draft, you know, and just, it's a little toddler and it's just trying. And I think I turned back to it with like so much sudden mercy. And I was like, oh, cause I, last time I had looked at it, I was like, it's all gotta go. Like, it was almost like I almost like woke up from a dream where my baby was dying or something. It's like, oh, it's all here and it's okay. And like, this is why I said like this conversation that the three of us have been having in preparing for this retreat has already really been very moving for me. And I think that it's like an ingredient of like why I'm turning back to the book with like a sudden compassion. And just like on an overarching thing, like I've been blocked for long stretches of time. And I think in my first time I ever had that happen, I was like, shit, it's gone. I'm broken. And over my over decade long career, I'm like, you just wait. You just gotta wait. And it always comes back. And enough time usually takes care of it. But you gotta be like this, like having conversations about it. And yeah, anyway, that's me.
I was just thinking about, so my spouse and I have a 3-year-old who my spouse gave birth to. And it was a long and painful process for us to decide to have a baby together. Because my my kid, who I gave birth to in my previous marriage, is 13. And I had a really difficult experience of the postpartum time. I had postpartum depression, and I just am not somebody who loves parenting newborns and babies. It's not, it's just not my thing. Mm-hmm. And I really didn't want to do it again. And I also felt that I had come to a certain place in my adulthood of finally getting space to do my creative work. And I didn't want to give that up. And I knew that parenting a young child, even, you know, 50% of the time, will really take it out of you. Anyway, we really took the process of figuring this out seriously and eventually really came to be on the same page. And it was really beautiful and really hard. And I learned so much about myself. And all this to say, people said to me, you know, those wonderful things like, wow, you should write a book about this. But honestly, after I had spent so long living it, by the time the baby was born and we got through those really hard months, which, spoiler alert, were really hard for my spouse too, and that was so healing for me to just have like support someone through this thing that mm-hmm. I had such difficulty with. Yeah. And then we got to have difficulty with it together. But anyway, all this to say, sort of the outside world was saying to me, you should write a book about this. But by the time I was done living it, I really felt like, I don't think I have the energy for a whole book around this material anymore. But you know what I do have? I have the energy to make some smaller things about this. Mm-hmm. And so when I think about the idea of like finding play again in one's work, I think about this series of essays that I wrote about the decision to have a baby together. Again, which was really painful. Mm. I wrote about that. I wrote about deciding who our donor would be. I wrote about the actual process of impregnating my spouse as a female person and then being present at my spouse's life-changing experience of birth. And it was so fun because giving myself those smaller containers mm-hmm. allowed me to say, you know what? We're not trying to make something big out of this, but there is stuff here that I do want to spend time with.
Yeah.
And so really finding what in it felt true and honest and important for me to say and important for me to record, and making a container that could fit those things. Mm-hmm. I had such fun writing those pieces, the irreverence of it. You know, I mean, like, human bodies are so weird and having babies is so weird. And so just, I don't know. One of the things that writing does for me is it rewards me for being honest with myself.
Yeah.
And for being honest with my own life mm-hmm. and doing that both on the page and it helps me do that in person too.
Mm.
And that project really, I adored writing those four essays.
Mm. Oh my gosh.
I love that.
Yeah. Well, I think we've explained why we love these containers so much, right? I think it's obvious how when you have an accessible container, you're much more likely to do a creative habit or practice. And that's what we're trying to teach during the retreat. And so while we could talk forever and ever, you'll just have to come to Spain with us in order to-
And then we will talk forever and ever, 24/7. Yeah.
We'll be doing wake-up calls on people's stories.
No. Hey, it's time to talk. Let's stay up all night telling secrets.
That's actually like the part I love about retreats. It's like slumber girl, slumber party. Like that is my favorite part about retreats. I led one about a year ago in California, and there was like this one night where I don't even know the astrology of all this stuff, but it was like something good was going on with the stars. And I'm like, we've got to go outside. And so it wound up with each of us howling at the moon and then each of us mimicking each other's howls. like the retreat or the venue staff are like looking out at us and we're just, oh, and I'm like, I love this so much. Playing games. Oh, you just wait, friends. It's going to be fun.
I think it's always a good thing, you know, when the retreat develops its inside jokes, that can leave, you know, anyone else who might be on the property scratching their heads a bit. I love that.
Exactly.
Ooh. Uh-huh. So you mentioned this earlier, Nadine, but should we each talk about a retreat experience?
Yeah, let's close it out with that. So what's a moment that has changed you either as a retreat participant or leader? Go ahead, Hallie.
Okay. Well, I just want to say that before a few years ago, I thought the idea of a retreat sounded like hell. Like I was like alone with your work. Like that sounds so bad. Like I really didn't think that sounded like a nice time. I was very scared. And my friend Jacqueline Suskin, the lauded poet, she's like religious about it. She's like, oh, this is fundamental to my creative practice, and I love and admire her so much that I was like, okay, I guess I'll consider it. And she gave me this pep talk. And this was my first, I just planned my own retreat. I just went to like an Airbnb by myself, but she like talked me through how to approach it and kind of like unscared me about it. She was like, it can be what you want it to be. Like you're in charge of this. So I set an intention. I was like, okay, I'm basically rappelling into my creative mind. And my goal at that retreat was, what did I want to work on next? I had so many ideas and I didn't know what was what. And I just like needed to go and sit and like look through all my sketchbooks and look through all my Google Docs and be like, what stands out to me? And it ended up being like the most amazing experience in which I observed my own behavior when I'm left to my own devices in a way that was like incredibly eye-opening and healing. And I was like, oh my God, like Hallie, if she's given the opportunity, she's just like eating an empanada in the bathtub and taking notes. And like, it was awesome. Like this is like the adulthood thing. I was just so used to like, I didn't even have kids at that point, but I was so used to just like your daily routine and the rigidity of it. And then the way that like expansive thinking can sometimes be really hard when you're just like kind of obsessed with laundry or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, so this experience totally sold me on retreating. And I've done it multiple times a year since. I think that was like 2021 or something. And that retreat was the one where I landed on the book that I'm working on now, the one that I have been abusing, and just had this like really powerful moment of like, oh, this is the book. Like, this is the story I'm supposed to be working on. And the only reason I could even see the compass direction to follow was because I set aside like 4 days in 2021. Yeah. And I've been working on that book for 5 years. So I have tried to pep talk every person in my life to retreat. And sometimes I'll hear like, oh, it's just, that just sounds so indulgent. I'm like, yes. Indulge, please. So now I think it's heaven. I used to think it sounded like hell. So that's my conversion.
Yes, a pattern interrupter from the minutia of your daily life. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Molly, how about you?
Well, and I was going to say, you know, what you're describing is, I mean, even though we will be in community on this retreat, we're leading together. It may still feel daunting for people to think about all the hours when you are on your own too, you know, like you go to bed with your own mind, you wake up with your own mind, right? And that's so beautiful and something that I think even if we live alone, we don't pay attention to that experience the way that we do when we are outside of our normal routine. For me, the first time I, you know, retreated myself was working on my third book, The Fixed Stars. A friend of mine said, she's like, I've got this cabin behind my house and we don't use it. And this friend lives in rural Virginia And I live in Seattle, but she was like, if you get yourself out here, you can use it free of charge. You can stay as long as you want. Mm. So I flew out to Virginia and I stayed in this cabin and it didn't have a bathroom and I don't think it had overhead lights, lots of lamps. And I was a little bit afraid there was a ghost in there.
There was, Molly.
And there was. But look, I'm still here. You're here. I survived. No, but it was life-changing in that I mean, like you're describing, Hallie, with the empanada in the bathtub, we are so different when we remove ourselves from our normal surroundings, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I remember this day that I wrote feverishly for like 8 hours and really for the first time could see the whole expanse of the book that I was that I had known I was writing for 14 months yes. at that point.
Yeah.
But I hadn't been able to really see it. And that's the kind of stuff that, you know, whether you're on a solo retreat or whether you, you know, sign up for something like this that is more structured, for me, I come away with ideas and a feeling of spaciousness that I can't access at home. And that happens for me too as like an instructor or a leader of these things. I mean, I always leave a retreat or a you know, a week-long workshop that I've led feeling so filled up with like my own creative stuff.
Yes.
Even though I've been leading the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I already know that this will change our lives. I definitely know that.
We're just promising that to everyone. Well, it is interesting because the first retreat I ever went on was in 2011, and it was in the aftermath of all the stuff that I just talked about with IVF and the hemorrhaging. So I was low. That was probably one of the lowest I've been in my whole life. And so I go on this writing retreat to Guatemala. And before then, I had been a fiction writer. You guys, I don't know if you knew this about me, but I was a fiction writer before.
I did not know this about you.
Yeah. And so I go there and I can't write anything not true anymore. I had so much stuff going on in my life that I was just like, okay, I'll write this and then I'll get back to the fiction. And every day we would swim in Lake Atitlan and I felt like my body was healing. I had this gigantic scar down my midsection and I was wearing a bathing suit that showed it and I was kind of embarrassed. So much body stuff was going on and I'm swimming in these waters and I'm surrounded by these other creative women and being held by this space in this place, the volcanoes in the background. And I felt so healed in a way that I did not feel healed back home in Massachusetts at that point. And the instructor said to me, I was talking about the IVF process and the embryos that we had waiting for us. And we didn't know if my body could be ready to implant them. And she said, write about those babies. And I just started weeping and because it just seemed impossible at that time that we would ever have a kid because we had so much mayhem. And she said, write about those babies. And I wrote this piece called 9 Babies on Ice as a result of that retreat. And I submitted it to Pink Magazine, which at the time Roxane Gay was an editor of, and they had a parenting issue. And I was like, well, this is about me not being a parent and being really fucking pissed that it's not happening for us and we're so sad. And I wrote that essay and it got accepted. And that became the basis of This Much I'm Sure, which was my memoir that came out years later. So all of that is a result of a retreat. So it's
you guys, we're all literally talking about retreats that like, no wonder what we're doing because.
Yeah, we believe in them wholeheartedly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So join us. Join us in Spain, everyone. I'm It'll really change excited. Your life. Just a small promise.
Can't wait.
Thank you, Molly. Thank you, Hallie. This
thank
is really
you guys.
Fun.
Thank you all. What a pleasure.
Our friends, I believe it. Come to Spain. It'll change your life. So If you are thinking of joining us, please do, because once we announced it, spots started filling up really fast, and I anticipate that within the next week or two, they will be totally full. Every time I go onto the page, I see that yet another room is sold out. So don't hesitate, my friends. Take the leap. Come join us, your new best friends. And big thanks to a real-life best friend of mine, Michelle Rado, my dear producer, who's been with me from the beginning, makes the show everything that it is. Big thanks to you, Michelle. And remember, every heart has a story, and every story has a heart. See you next time.